let's just be honest about where I am and where I'm doing this from. And I'll just do like a little Game of Thrones rant, and then I'll go and attend to my father, and then you guys will go into detail.
I'm impressed that talking about Thrones qualifies to your father as work, because I can't get away with that with Edward for some reason.
Well, he doesn't know any different. What does he know? All right, let's do this real quick before he has another freak out.
We are here for another episode of Let's Talk About Thrones, and we have with us, as always, Sir Anthony.
Hello.
And Sir Jenny from afar.
Yes, Sir Jenny of Mount Sinai Hospital.
Okay.
Just to be clear, it's not so much that I'm in the hospital, my dad's in the hospital. And I'm being a good daughter.
Yeah. Well, and I am amazed that you're joining us for this, but we're probably going to get a couple minutes of you, so we'll take advantage of that as best we can. I of course, am, I believe, Lord Commander Richard, and I am here to kick off the conversation about an episode that was ultimately called The Bells, which HBO very cleverly concealed until after the episode had aired live. This was one of the episodes.
I saw that in my app. It said episode 72.
Right. So
they've been doing that this whole season.
That's not something that I was anticipating. It's not something that I would have expected, but they seem to have done a pretty good job of, not spoiling us, because the words, the bells, probably would have spoiled us. So let's get into it. And I'm going to kind of open this up by asking Jenny what your overall impressions of were of this penultimate episode of Game of Thrones. And I know you only have a little bit of time, so this is your floor.
All right. So here's the deal, okay? This episode was in some ways a better lit version of my thoughts on the Battle of Winterfell, right? It was incredibly directed. There were subplots that were amazing. It blew your mind to see everything that they had thought about and plotted through. And I am of the opinion that the plotting was fantastic. Like, I thought that the Arya and the Hound arc was fantastic. I thought Clegane Bowl was appropriately amazing. I thought Jon's arc, the end of Varys was probably one of the most stunning things in the whole episode, and it happened in the first 5 minutes. And I guess the only thing that me and all of Twitter apparently agree on is that they made the turn really fast on Daenerys' descent into madness. Now, as someone who has dealt with mental health issues throughout her lifetime, not just me, but also, members of my family, I understand that there can be a trigger event that sends you into craziness, which eventually, in this case, was the death of Missandei. And after that, it was all red hot Targaryen rage. But one thing that struck me, one thing I'll never forget about this episode, was Daenerys Targaryen, the moment that she heard the bells and they kind of triggered her again, and she just went after it and started burning up all of King's Landing and murdering just innocent people. After that first shot of her on the dragon, you never saw her face again for the rest of the episode. And yeah. I was just kind of like, what? You never saw her wrestle. You never saw anything. She just became the deliverer of fire, and there was no face you could lock it to. No, it was just, she was death from above. And that was the one thing that I actually thought was super unfair about what they did to her character. Otherwise, I would just say it really is an example of the same rushed feeling that we've had through all of these shortened yet longer episodes, which is there should have been two more arcs of this descent. And instead we got it in 15 minutes. And that's what people were stressing out about. But like, look, they had in previous seasons her walking up to the throne in through a sea of ash. So like, it's not like this hasn't been presaged. It's just in the exact moment it happened really abruptly. But I will kind of say, like, in the exact moment it does happen abruptly. And then, you know, I think there's a really good Twitter thread that if you go to my at Jenny J, J-E-N-N-I-E-J 23, I retweeted it about the difference between plotters and planters in writing, in which plotters intricately plot things out beat by beat, and they move the story forward through plot. And in this instance, they move the story forward through character. In the books, like George R.R. Martin's all about character, and characters develop and characters make choices through character. Like, they don't, he lets the plot happen through the characters. And I think in this instance, with six episodes, you had to let the plot happen because of plot, and we're feeling it. We're just all feeling it. So that's my take on this episode from Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City.
Thoughts? So I have two quick questions for you, just so that we don't lose your input on this one. There are two story arcs that for me are wholly unsatisfying and frankly disappointing. One of them is Arya's decision after an amazing moment between her and Clegane, where he kind of shows his affection for her almost as a daughter and manages to talk her out of years of planning to kill Cersei in 2 seconds. And the other is Cersei, who's been a master at this chess game, just being a wet noodle the entire time.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a big problem with that. So the Cersei Lannister arc was probably my least favorite part of this. Although, I will say, I do think her end was consistent. A lot of people disagree with me there, but I do think Jaime's actions were consistent. I do think, and again, I don't believe there's an end until I see a body with these shows, right? So while I think they were attempting an emotionally satisfying end, I'm not 100% sure that her character was served best. But I really do believe that being toppled by your own ambition and buried by your own ambition, that's not half bad. I think she was on another show. Like, to me, the lack of her appearance in the episodes preceding this felt like she was on another show. It was like, or having a baby or something, and it was unavailable. That, like, the way they work around actresses' availability, that's what that felt like to me, because otherwise it made no sense.
How about Arya?
I liked it. Nothing Arya does is wrong by me. It's like Clegane snapped her out of her single-minded list-based initiative, right? That's all she'd been doing, the list. And then he snapped her out of it. He said, "You're going to die. Do you want to die?" And clearly she's still enough Arya to be like, "No." And then she came out and tried to save people and was obviously completely devastated when the people she saved turned to Pompeii-level statues, right? And then, this was my favorite part, the end of the episode, she became the Book of Revelations. She got herself on a pale horse. And I think she is death, and I think she is headed straight for Daenerys.
She's back. She's running back to the Delos station so she can go home from Westworld.
That is true. So that's what I got. I was enraptured by it. I watched it alone in my room after doing stuff to care for my dad that I never thought I would do and never want to do again. I got to go because I see the doctor. So you guys have a great episode. I can't wait to hear it.
All right. Thank you so much, Jenny. So, Anthony, I think just in that short amount of time, we kind of got a feel for my frustration, and we can dive into that a little bit more. But your overall thoughts on this one?
given the limitations that we know we have a definite end point, we have a time frame that we have to follow. I thought it was it might be my favorite episode this season.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Okay. I read something this morning on Wired UK where they said this was probably the worst episode of the series. And I'm not entirely sure that I disagree with that.
I can see that, but there, I was on the edge of my seat the entire time. Of all the story arcs that occurred, the ones that I saw coming, I didn't think they'd have the balls to pull off. And the ones that I didn't see coming were surprising enough to me and played out well enough that it didn't take me out of the moment. And I just overall, I like culmination. I like that we're not waiting until the very last episode to get to all the answers. I like the fact that some things were answered right away, you know, or at least in this episode, before we had to wait until the very last episode. And I'm not subjective to all the hate hype out there. I thought it was good. My wife did not. I got the feeling from her that she may not even watch next week just because she hated this week so much.
Yeah, similarly, Edward hated this week's episode. When we were watching, the whole time, he's just saying, "She's so stupid. She's so stupid. I can't believe how stupid she is." And I'm defending her up until the moment that she snaps. Because I'm like, she's young. She's been put in this situation and she knows the kind of the limits of her abilities and what she's capable of accomplishing. And without her advisors, she's going to go a little bit haywire. I didn't expect it to be this bad. So let's back up and let's kind of talk through some of the scenes so that we can put some context to this discussion.
Yeah.
We basically start with Varys. Varys is what he appears to be doing is documenting what he knows. We don't know necessarily what's going to happen to that, whether he intends on sharing that information or just having it there in case anything happens to him. Ultimately, he ends up destroying what he's written.
He's writing a scroll, a Raven scroll, and he's already got a couple written sitting beside him. When that's happening. So I think he's trying to spread the word about John.
Okay.
And we're not given any context or anything else. I think he's trying to spread the word about John. Now the question is, did those messages get out, or was he rather ceremoniously stopped beforehand? So
Right. Because we see him burn some that he's writing and we don't know if that's all of them or whether that's just the latest one that he had. So, but we also get the feeling that he's had some time, right? Because they staged this with a girl coming in and presumably she's trying to get Daenerys taking food to Daenerys and reporting back to Varys about whether she's eating or not and how things are going. Mm-hmm. And then we cut to Tyrion, who is basically confessing to Daenerys that Varys has betrayed her and I'm the person who told him. She figures that out because she figures out how this played out. Sansa told him after Jon told them, and she never wanted that to happen. So she actually blames Jon. and says that Varys's death is on him, and they go and get Varys. They take him out. We have a great couple of relatively quiet moments between Varys and Tyrion, where you kind of have the opportunity to remember what trusted allies and friends they've been along this journey. And then you say, unceremoniously or ceremoniously, just kind of as a matter of fact, in a regular old voice,
yep,
we have Daenerys uttering the command to Drogon to burn him up. And
she does explain that this is, I mean, she, without saying that it's not a trial, she says, you know, Lord Varys, I, Daenerys Stormborn, first, or Daenerys Targaryen, Stormborn, first of my name, blah, 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 sentence you to death.
Yeah.
You know, there was no trial, there's no asking questions or anything else, just matter of fact, and like everybody knew that's what it was for. And
Drogon, and she kept her promise.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Burn him alive. So, so that's the end of that. And that's how the episode starts. And I, this is where I feel, you know, this was my worst concern coming into these episodes, is that it would feel rushed as we're starting to wrap things up. This one felt rushed. We just at the end of the last episode kind of talked about them talking treasonously and Varys kind of going off in his own direction, and for that to happen and get wrapped up in the first 10 minutes just seemed really, really rushed, very much like what Jenny was saying. So that kind of set the stage, I think, for how the whole episode seemed to work from my perspective.
See, and that is one thing that I don't feel this episode was rushed. I think in the context of things, you have to start closing storylines down. Daenerys, I'm sure we'll get to Daenerys here in a little bit, but Daenerys played the game exactly the way she said she's going to. If I find out that you're doing this, I'm going to kill you. She did. So she did.
Yep.
And there didn't need to be any more drama to it. You had the little moment between Tyrion and Varys, and that was all that you needed, because no one else has a personal connection to Varys. Everyone else just sees Varys as the spider. Tyrion was the only one that actually had a friendship or a kinship with him. So
right. You
had that closeout, and it was Tyrion that turned him in. Tyrion that told the story, Tyrion that ragged him out. So there didn't need to be anything else there. It was just known. It was matter of fact. It was ready. And you'll notice that you didn't hear Varys scream when Drogon blasted him with fire.
Like, right.
It was a matter of fact thing. And this was already promised to us by Melisandre when, you know, she said we're both destined to die on this continent. Like, we already knew he was going to die.
Yeah, yeah. So, no, I expected that.
So it didn't
that.
Feel rushed. It didn't feel rushed. It felt right on time. It felt like we got business to attend to. We got other things we need to talk about. But this is one of those moments where let's close the story out, and I think they closed it out perfectly.
Okay. All right. So let's move on to John and Danny, because we have a moment where John visits Danny, and he's interrupting a conversation between Grey Worm and Danny, where Danny presents to Grey Worm what I believe were the shackles, the leather shackles that Missandei was in. Is that correct?
Yep. It was her. That was her final possession. The only thing she brought with her from Essos were these. I think it was a collar, a slaver's collar.
Okay.
That she kept or whatever. And Danny hands it to Grey Worm, and Grey Worm goes and throws it straight into the fire. And if you'll notice, when Danny addresses Grey Worm, she does so in the old Valyrian, and she doesn't say Grey Worm. She says the Valyrian words for Grey Worm.
So I did not notice that. Okay.
Yeah, as an actual name. So, little things here and there that they're adding up very quickly.
Yep. Okay. So John and Danny talk, and it's the same old discussion. I don't want to be king. I told you this was going to happen. Yeah, but I don't want it. I'm, you know, you're my queen. And they have a very awkward moment where they come together. She kisses him. He seems to not respond, then does a little bit, but pulls back.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think this is his her trigger moment.
Right. I was just going to say that.
This is the... John... This is irritating because I understand the argument against John and Danny. I don't care about it, but I understand the argument against John and Danny.
Right. And I think they've established enough background for us to be okay with it if you want to be okay with it.
Right. In context of this storyline in this world, it's fine. It's one of the least atrocious things ever. You know, considering all the incest and rape and everything else we've had for an aunt and a nephew to get along with each other.
Right.
It's not bad. Like, okay. I mean, it's not for me, but it's for them. Okay, cool. But John, he, in this instance, he has one job and it's to lie.
He won't do that. Come on.
I know. And he keeps, like, he's got too much Ned Stark in his brain.
Right.
And he does the honorable thing and he doesn't lie. And of course, that turns out poorly. Like, John, just lie.
Yeah, he's never going to do that. Never going
to
do that.
We need you to lie for 5 minutes. We need you to knock her off one more time, real quick, and then move on with your life. But don't let her go into this battle with the chip on her shoulder about anything.
She talks about how people love him. She doesn't have love. Nobody loves her. He says he loves her. They kiss. She pulls away. She's like, they talk about how you could reign by love or fear. And she says, let it be fear.
Well, she says, let it be fear then.
Yes.
Like this, she's not just saying that. She's saying it in response to John.
In response to John pulling away.
Yes. And, yeah. Come on. God, John, come on.
It's totally in character for him. So I do not blame him at all.
I don't either. I don't blame the storyline either. I just, it's, as a viewer of the show, it's a disappointment in a character that I have no right to be disappointed in.
But I'm disappointed in her, frankly, because I have a whole big problem with this whole black and white thing. You know, she cannot seem to wrap her head around the idea of how to do this right. How she has multiple opportunities in this episode to do it right, and she blows it every time. So, next scene, Tyrion and Dany having the same old conversation as Dany is preparing the troops to go to war and put this to rest. And
yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I think you've already said it. It's the same old conversation.
This is
nothing new because this is Dany wanting to go in guns a-blazing and then somebody tempering her down.
Exactly. And we get a moment where we think that even at this last stage where she's at the edge, Tyrion is successful. And I'm thinking, well, what the hell does he have up his sleeve that he's going to pull off if he thinks that the city is going to surrender? He convinces her that if the gates go up and the bells go off, that is the sign that they have surrendered. Please, please, please don't attack them if the city surrenders. And she agrees. She agrees at least so much as to the command that she gives Grey Worm. She never says, okay.
Right.
She just nods to Grey Worm that, yes, do what he just said.
I don't even think that... I can go conspiracy theories here. I don't think that the conversation that John interrupted between Danny and Grey Worm was the only part of that conversation. I think they had other parts of conversation, and Danny nodding to Grey Worm wasn't saying, yes, if the bells ring and the gates go up, stop the attack. It was more like, that's our sign.
You know that thing that we talked about earlier? This is, you're being activated now.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. This isn't, hey, at that point we'll stop. It's, hey, at that point we take our vengeance. That's when our bloodlust can be fulfilled. And I picked that up when it happened, and I was like, oh, that's not going to be good. These bells are going to go off and bad things are going to happen.
I did not read it that way. That kind of makes sense, and it helps explain another stupid move that I questioned later in the storyline. So it's an interesting theory. I like it. All right. Well, in this conversation, Danny also lets Tyrion know that Jaime has been captured. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, he has to go find Jaime. Not surprising. So John, Tyrion, Davos are all landing by dinghy on shore at an encampment where the troops are preparing. They talk about how she wants us to go to war now. It's dark out. I'm thinking, oh, please, no. And John says, no, we'll go in the morning. I'm like, yes, thank you. I'll be able to see this battle.
Yeah. So when this happened, I was thinking, well, if they go at night, as long as she's not wearing one of her bright white cloaks, going at night might be the best thing, or going at least pre-dawn, because you can't see a dark dragon in the sky at night. You know, that right. might be the best idea. She turns that idea around and says, well, you can't see a bright dragon when you're looking at the sun. But that was still my first thought, and I was like, well, that would be the perfect time to attack is right before dawn, because then she can go in and start doing some damage to the battlements and things like that and the ships before the troops actually go in. But no, they waited until like noon. It's like high noon. Like, they timed it for when the sun was going to be brightest.
Yep. So Tyrion goes to find Jaime, manages to talk his way past some guards by reminding them that he outranks them. If he really does, I don't know if that is true from a military perspective, but he gets to talk to Jaime. They have what you kind of have to assume is their last moment together. Kind of again, this is almost a repeat of a scene that we've seen, and they even reference that, where he's letting Jaime go as opposed to Jaime freeing him, as he did back in the castle years ago.
Right. At this point, you knew Jaime was going to die.
Like, yes.
Because it had become recursive. All the things had come back. So.
And we have between them what I think is probably the most satisfying closure between characters that I've probably ever seen in this series.
Yes, it's satisfying because you know there can only be two outcomes. You know that either one of them is going to die or that they will never see each other again. Mm-hmm. Those are the only two possibilities, because if they ever see each other again, one of them is going to die.
Yep.
You know, so it's it really closes it all out. I'm glad. And this is really what Tyrion wanted the entire time. He wanted to tell his brother how he actually felt and how he, you know, had looked up to him and had held him in a sacred place this whole time, and thank him for protecting him when he was little and things like that, even though he was part of this torture that his family put Tyrion through. He was still the best of the torturers. This is a nice moment of closure that you knew was a moment of closure, and you didn't have to like guess or anything else. It was just kind of like delivered to you. Here's the happy part, and it's the sad moment.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. Now, meanwhile, tons of people are flooding into the gates, unbeknownst to them, where they're going to get slaughtered eventually. And, of course, that's Cersei's plan, right? Mm-hmm. If they attack us, then I want as many people to die as possible, because that will dissuade them from doing that. Mm-hmm. Maybe, maybe not. So people are flooding in. We see Arya, who is she and
the Hound.
The Hound, Clegane, are on their way to, you know, handle their respective
lists.
Yeah. Is it lists or is it their targets, right? She's there to kill Cersei. He's there to find and kill the Mountain.
Yeah. I think they're each one item lists. And I don't know if a single item constitutes a list, but that's essentially where they're at.
Here's also where we are introduced to the mother and daughter that weave through the storyline in this episode and kind of add a personality and faces to the many people of the city who are, you know, and the fate that they're facing.
This is Schindler's Red Coat.
I don't understand the reference because I've never seen the movie you're referencing, but okay.
Yeah, there's throughout Schindler's List, there's this one little girl wearing a red coat that you kind of see off all the time, and it's a black and white movie, so this red coat really stands out. And it's the only color in the whole movie. And then you follow the fate of this red coat and this little girl that's wearing it. And this is essentially what we're doing here. We meet this mother-daughter pair, and we follow them through their entire story until it concludes. And it's just that they're memorable enough to know that you've seen them before, but not necessarily to know where you've seen them before. And it weaves this little bit of a narrative for the people in King's Landing by way of these two people.
This was incredibly well done. This may be my favorite. This may be my favorite little thing of this episode. Just the way they use them to represent, to put a personal face on the people of the city.
Yeah.
I thought that was just phenomenal. All right, so let's go to war. Everybody's preparing for war. The troops are outside. Inside, we have scorpions everywhere. Everyone's wondering, where's the dragon? Where's the dragon?
Mm-hmm.
But as you said, Dany is way more strategic this time around.
Yeah. Yeah, instead of just floating along, lollygagging around, she actually flies up and does, dang it, I just, the new name of the maneuver just flipped off my mind, but you basically fly in the direction, or you fly at your enemy from the direction of the sun, thereby blinding your enemy to your exact location and giving you the advantage until you get much, much closer. And she uses that to full effect to take out Euron and his navy.
And also, because of how dragons are constructed, by flying directly at the enemy, she also exposes the least amount of surface area for them to hit. Yep. Right?
So the lowest profile.
She is way, way more strategic about that. She basically decimates the fleet in a couple of passes and takes some side maneuvers to start getting some of the scorpions from the walls of the city as well. Yeah. And in very short order, manages to eliminate all of the weaponry that they had against the dragon.
Yes. And again, this is two parts. One, it's the hiding in the sun and attacking the ships. And then once, because when you're that high, the scorpions can't aim that high. They can, you know, go pretty far. They can angle pretty high up, but they can't go direct, you know, straight up. And coming down at the ships like that, the ships had a better chance than the battlements did. And the ships didn't last very long because of, you know, the profile of the sun, all that kind of stuff. And then she goes and attacks the scorpions by strafing at a low altitude. Well, they can't go down. They're trained, or they're designed to go up. So she attacks from a low altitude, which limits their ability and their mobility to attack her. And by the time they can even think about adjusting and gaining their bearing on it, she's already decimated most of the battlements on the Red Keep. So,
oh, and by the way, while doing that, good time to probably also light up and scare the shit out of the Golden Army and literally cause their general to run away. Okay. I thought that was crazy lame.
Yes, that was. So she comes she flies through the city and has Drogon blast away the main gate to where all her troops are waiting outside. The Golden Company is standing out there just waiting for the troops to start marching in on the city. And they don't have to wait very long because the gate blows up, blows half the Golden Company away, and most of the others just run away. And now there's a big gaping hole in the wall for all of Daenerys' troops to flood through.
Yeah, so they didn't even, like, the running away really bugged me. It really bugged me. This is an army for hire. And I felt like they should have been badasses. They ran away.
They also have never faced a dragon.
True. Did nobody tell them who they were fighting? I mean, come on.
It's one thing to hear stories about this lady and her dragons. It's another thing entirely to have this huge beast flying through, just blasting away at everything.
Okay. So, I'll give you that. And again, that will follow through shortly in some additional discussion that we'll have. So basically, most of the forces are decimated. And all the while, Cersei's been looking at the progress of this battle from her tower. And she's had her hand, Qyburn, they're delivering bad news the entire time, and yet she stands firm. She's just going to stand and watch. She has confidence that everything will be fine. Her troops will protect her. Nothing to worry about.
I think this is where most people are getting it wrong.
Okay. Tell me how I'm wrong, because this pissed me off. This does not strike me as the calculating, strategic figure that we have spent 7 years learning about.
Because she's not.
What?
I told you back when Tommen jumped out the window, she was losing her grip on her sanity.
Hmm. Okay. So
she's not standing there in defiance with confidence. She's standing there in defiance that anything's going to happen to her because she's lost the reasoning part of her mind. She's completely taken that away. That's why she was even thinking about holding Euron as a consort. That's why she has no ability. It's not wanting to back down. She doesn't have the ability to reason that things are going to end. She is so that she doesn't understand that there's repercussions. She has convinced herself that everything is going to work because she wants it to. This is not a sane woman standing at a window watching everything burn around her with confidence that it's going to stop. This is a woman driven into madness by the effects of her life and her choices, and she is not able to see that things are not going to go her way. It's not confidence, it's madness.
Okay. All right. That explanation would be, you know, would fit with what happened. Even with us discussing that, I forgot that. And I have to wonder, does your average viewer even pick that up?
Probably not. And that's why I'm a super fan.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, meanwhile, chaos is going on down on the ground. And, of course, that's what Cersei's watching. Grey Worm is on the front line with Jon and they are. And yeah, what is that about? I just don't understand it. And they're kind of at, they're well, at a,
remember Tyrion freed Jaime to go save Cersei in hopes that Jaime would talk Cersei into some semblance of sanity and get Cersei out of there. And once Cersei's sure. removed, the city would fall. There'd be less blood. But Tyrion just sent Jaime into the lion's den, quite literally, in order to try to control the situation and to know the information and see what happens and understand what's going on. He has to be right in the thick of things. He's not going to be standing on the side. Even though he's not fighting, he wants to be as close to what's going on as possible. He wants to see it, everything go down with his own eyes. He's hoping to see Jaime and Cersei running away, hoping that the little dinghy will be effective and they'll be able to get out of there. So it makes sense for him to be there. It's just tragic the way that it plays out.
It is tragic, and he gets to watch it right from the thick of it. But meanwhile, the Dany's troops
are winning.
They're winning, but we're now inside the city at a literal crossroads, and we have Dany's army and the folks from King's Landing, the Lannister army, at a stalemate, and they are kind of poised to fight. And then the dragon flies in overhead. You hear a whole lot of screaming, and the Lannister armies drop their swords when the dragon lands.
Yep.
And they realize they can't win against this.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's about that time that we start to hear the bells ringing.
It is. People we hear yelling, lots of people yelling, please ring the bells. Please, for God's sake, ring the bells.
Yep.
And then the bells. So we finally get the moment we were waiting for, where the battle is over and Dany has won. And now we can. Oh, right. But that's not how it's going to play out, is it?
Right. And I can imagine this is the part that you had the biggest problem with, especially with the sped up timelines that everyone talks about and everything else. And this is the part where I had already decided this was going to happen, and it played exactly to my expectations. And maybe I'm just far too cynical to watch this as a normal person. but this is exactly how I thought it was going to happen, and it did. And yes, go ahead.
Yeah. So Dany goes crazy. Dany loses it. And you see that in her face. And this is the moment that Jenny was talking about, where this is the last time we see Dany. We see her go from her kind of strategic fighting mode into this crazy mode. And you see it in her face. You see tears. You see anger. You see rage. And that's the last that you see her face. And she takes off on the dragon and all hell breaks loose.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think what it is, conquering the city was a hollow victory. It didn't give her the satisfaction she needed, because her enemy wasn't the city. Her enemy was Cersei Lannister.
Fine. Go get Cersei. She's in one of those towers. Right? I mean, she decides for whatever reason to start burning up the city before even glancing at the towers to think, oh, maybe Cersei's up in one of those.
I think she did look at the towers. I think she knew Cersei would be in the Red Keep, this building that her ancestors had built. And I don't think she saw the people in King's Landing or the Red Keep as the people she was liberating anymore. She was now taking vengeance on the people that were supporting Cersei Lannister. And this is all part of that descent into madness, because Cersei and Daenerys have the same disease, the same mental disease. They just went about, they got there different ways, but what it is, Dany, this entire the whole series, Dany has been edging on insanity. She's been brought up to understand that this is her destiny. She doesn't have anything else. Her only goal was to take the Iron Throne. She's said this multiple times in the series, that the only thing that she's fought for her entire life is to take the Iron Throne.
Right. Okay.
We have this moment where we think she might be a heroine. In several instances, you know, Marine, and she's freeing the people and she cares about the people. But when it comes to her enemies, she's only ever had one consideration, and that's obliterating her enemies. She's always had to be brought down from that. That's always been her natural tendency, is to just rain fire and blood. I mean, that's, you know, that's the house sigil or whatever. And this is not out of character for her to snap at this moment when with none of her advisors around her, her lover rejecting her, and everything that she's fought for being so close at hand. It's not out of character for her to snap at that moment, because there's nothing holding her back anymore. She's done it.
Yeah.
No one can tell her no anymore. And this has always been her natural tendency. So she does it.
She does it. I will want to actually talk a little bit about predictions this time, and we don't usually do that, but she lost the throne. She lost the throne.
Well, now
even if she survives, she lost the throne.
She can't, as she could have gone in there as the victor and as the savior of the city, the person who released them from the grip that was Cersei Lannister, that's going to treat him fairly and everything else. She lost that. There's still the option of holding the throne through fear and through power, just like she said at the beginning of the episode. We'll see if that goes, and I guess we'll talk some theories towards the end here, but those are the two options. You can either have the people's love or the people's fear, and right now she has the people's fear, clearly, what people are left.
Yeah, but I don't see that those who remain around her will actually stand for her taking the throne. I don't see it happening, but we'll see how that plays out. So she's on a vengeance and she's burning everything. People are dying. Grey Worm throws his sword at the men who had the men who had put down their swords. I was looking at the word sword as I was reading that. And chaos breaks out on ground too.
Yes.
And Grey Worm has been, I feel, one of the most level-headed military characters and true to their mission that they've had in this entire series. And maybe, as you said, this was him acting on what they discussed. When I give the signal, then do your thing. But killing men who had laid down their swords is so dishonorable. So dishonorable. I had a real problem with that, with his character. And I know vengeance and Missandei and love and all that.
Right. What value was killing Missandei?
Yeah.
She was literally a translator. She held no other than keeping her prisoner would be one thing, but actually killing her wasn't a matter of military strategy. It was an emotional strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And that elicits an emotional response.
Mm-hmm.
This was not a military tactician kind of thing that Grey Worm was doing. He was taking out vengeance because they took away the one thing that he loved. And the one person he's loyal to, other than Missandei, is Daenerys. And Daenerys has decided that the city doesn't need to be in one piece. And Grey Worm is going to follow her lead because that's what he does. I don't think this was a lack of military bearing or a break in character. This was him finally releasing years of pent-up rage and doing so in a way that shows his loyalty, so it's easily justifiable in his own mind.
Okay, well, meanwhile, while that's happening, John, who's suffered plenty of loss himself through similar moves by people he loves being killed, is still trying to be the voice of reason. He's trying to hold back the men. He sees the chaos that's happening.
Yep.
His people are killing people who live in the city instead of protecting them. How insane is that?
At one point, he finds a woman about to get raped, and he ends up killing the person. And I'm pretty sure the person was a northerner that was going to rape the other woman. It's just complete chaos. John is completely beside himself, and this is the most true to a character's arc that I think we go until we get to Arya, really. This is sad to see John, and I think he needed to see this. He needed to see what is going on and what his honor has wrought.
This is why she won't get the throne, because he sees what she is doing, and he will recognize at that moment that she is not fit to rule.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. This is clearly his moment of understanding. So
hey, remember that thing where we thought everybody on the ships died and that everybody was burnt up? And oh right, well, Euron survived because of course he did, and happens to be kind of person wrecked, washed up on the same beach that Jaime happens to be on,
because Jaime couldn't get through the city in time and he couldn't get the guard's attention to show his hand to show who he was. So he's going the back road he's going in the exit, which I think is all you need to know about how Jamie's going through life. He's going in the exit, the way that they were supposed to sneak out of the castle. He's using that to then sneak in, which, why wouldn't you just do that in the first place?
Right.
Whatever.
Right. But so he's there. We see the dinghy. That's how he's supposed to get away with Cersei. Great. Yep. Euron sees him, and Euron is being his normal dickish self and basically goads Jaime into fighting. Jaime doesn't really want to fight, but he has no choice. And so we get this really weird, overly long, drawn-out fight between them where Jaime is mortally wounded but doesn't die. And eventually... and eventually Euron does.
Yeah.
Yay. I'm glad Euron's dead. Another part of this story that seems like a diversion, like it was completely useless and unnecessary.
Did we see Euron die?
Of course, we didn't actually see him die. We see him seconds before death, and as everyone knows, not everybody dies.
We saw Jaime get stabbed 3 times in the belly with a extremely long dagger.
Once side to side.
Yes.
Like
through and through.
Right. But he's still walking.
Yeah, he's still walking enough to go up through the catacombs. And yeah, this is this fight, and the fact that we don't see Euron die, the fact that Jaime survives 3 bodily lacerations, like, and managed to make it all the way into the Red Keep and most of the way back out. This is the part where my suspension of disbelief was most hampered.
Hmm. Like this is what it took, huh?
Yeah, this.
All right. Well, yeah, I did. This just annoyed me because it was unrealistic that he had as much energy, even on adrenaline, that he did on his mission to save his sister. But whatever. Okay, so maybe Euron died. He definitely got struck down by Jaime. Jaime got struck down, but he's up again. And meanwhile, back in the city, Dany is finally targeting the castle. Mm-hmm. So spires are falling. The place is a mess. Qyburn finally convinces Cersei to get the hell out of there.
Well, because he tells her the armies are dead. The scorpions are destroyed. There's nothing left but to try to get you to somewhere safe.
Right. And this time, somehow, she listens. I guess I'm glad. I don't know. So,
I think her lease on that window finally expired. Because she's been, this season has been Cersei in the window. That could be the name of this season. Cersei in the window.
It is definitely the name of this episode of Let's Talk About Thrones. So, okay. Arya and Clegane are in the castle while it's falling around them, and they have this wonderful, tender moment that we talked about. It is probably my favorite scene between them. Again, I like when they have kind of moments of closure. This was a really good moment of closure between Clegane and Arya. Mm-hmm. Clegane kind of shows his love and affection toward and kind of paternal instincts toward her. And like I said before, convinces her not to die. Don't go through with the mission we just talked about while we rode down here for the last 5 weeks.
Yes.
They've been together on a journey from the north down to the south, very likely talking about everything they do once they get there.
Or not talking about it at all.
Maybe not, but they made the journey, and this is the culmination of everything she has wanted to do. But he manages to get through to her, and she listens. And I can see why people think this is great, but I have a problem with this. I just don't think she would have changed her mind.
I think you're wrong, and I think it's because how do I put this? When you live in the fantasy of accomplishing something, especially when you have this list of things you're going to get done, and you've already done most of the list, and what remains of the list has been taken care of by other people, except for one or two items, and you're there with a person who's going to take care of the other item. So it's just the mountain and Cersei that's on her list. Clegane Bowl is going to take care of the mountain, hopefully, and she's going to take care of Cersei. And this is a fantasy that you live in. This is what I'm going to do. This is how things are going to go out, and I've had all this success. And then you get into a castle that is literally being blasted by dragon fire, falling in upon itself, and you have the person who, whether they tried to or not, was instrumental in the way that you see the world, telling you that this is over. You can't survive this. Do you want to be me? Even if you do survive, are you going to be just angry and bitter and resentful for the rest of your life? Are you going to let that control you and keep you from relationships and keep you from exceeding at the things that you want to do? He literally says, do you want to be me? And if you're watching, Maisie Williams' face changes at that moment. She goes from Arya the killer back to Arya the child. And that is when I think it all clicks for her, that she doesn't want to be Sandor Clegane. She wants to be something more. She has other aspirations, other things to do in life than just waste it all on getting rid of this one name. And it is a sudden realization. And it may seem even more sudden if you realize, oh, yeah, they've been traveling for 30 days and they probably talked about this and blah, 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 blah. But they probably didn't. Because even in their most tender moments, they didn't share their goals and aspirations with each other.
Yeah, perhaps not.
It was always rather businesslike.
Okay. All right. We will agree to disagree. I can see your point. I just have a hard time fathoming it. And so they part, and Clegane makes his way up what remains of the tower to get the mountain. We see Qyburn and the mountain and Cersei kind of trying to get out as it's falling down around them. And of course, now we know that Cersei is not going to meet Arya's knife, but Clegane has the opportunity to end it with Cersei. But he has only one thing on his mind, the mountain, period.
Yes, and I think, and I saw some flack about this as well. I think this is completely in character.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have no problem with this. This is exactly what I expected to happen. In fact, I think this whole sequence is so satisfying in so many ways. So we have him going for the mountain kind of remembering himself. And ultimately defying Qyburn and killing Qyburn, that itself is incredibly satisfying.
I didn't see. So he grabs Qyburn and throws him against the wall. And as he's throwing him against the wall, I was thinking, man, that's going to hurt bad. Like that should at least shatter. If I don't see blood, I'm going to be,
he's dead.
Oh, Qyburn's done. Okay. And it was like the most satisfying of the deaths in this episode, to be honest with you, was the mountain just smashing Qyburn against the wall and then unceremoniously throwing him, just tossing him like trash down the stairs.
Right. Like somebody who didn't matter, right?
Right.
And also, by the way, his creator. So let's not forget all that symbolism too.
Mm-hmm.
So well done. I really liked that. Then we get some words between the mountain and Clegane. Now, help me out here, because multiple times they refer to each other as my brother.
Uh-huh.
True? For real?
Yes.
The mountain. How did I not know this?
I don't know. This is established in like episode 3 or something like that. Sandor Clegane and what's the mountain's name? I don't remember. So the Hound and the Mountain are brothers. The Mountain is the one that burned the Hound in the flame, which caused them all the grief and the fear of fire and everything else. Mm-hmm. So this is literally Clegane Bowl. This is the brothers going after each other, because this is what we've been waiting for since we found out that the brother and the Hound were the mountain and the Hound were brothers back in like episode 3.
So, Anthony, what'd you think?
I liked it. I liked the fight more than the explanation of the ending, because eventually they tussle. Some of the mountain's armor gets tossed off, and you can see that he's basically like a patchwork of a machine, almost like Darth Vader like. Under the armor, and he at one point grabs the Hound and throws him against the wall, and then goes to squeeze his eyes, and I was like, damn, dude, like, what do you got against eyeballs?
I know. I'm like, oh, that's fitting. Okay, I know that move. Yeah.
And the Hound slashes him a few times, stabs him straight through and through, and it's not effective at all. So when the Hound grabs him and basically pulls him through, you know, They smash through a wall, and he drags them with him down the tower, and they fall into a pit of flames several hundred feet below. I thought that it was completely fitting. Their story has ended together the way that it always should have.
Yeah, I liked I liked this. I liked this a lot. It is probably my favorite fight in a long time. I think that the what we see of the mountain and how what he is revealed to us kind of the same way at the same time that it's revealed to the Hound is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
We also you forgot to mention that he manages to get a knife through his brain, basically, like through his head. And that's probably the thing that gives him the biggest advantage. That's the thing that seems to affect him the most, so that there's at least something up there that's driving this body to continue to work. And then we have that moment where they fall together. He the Hound kamikazes him, basically pushes him off and takes him down. They go down together. I thought it was perfect. It's exactly what it needed to be. I thought it was very well choreographed and very satisfying.
Yep. I liked it a lot. Not as much as Qyburn getting smashed against a brick wall, but I liked it a lot.
Yeah, that was fantastic. Now we're at the point where I am completely unsatisfied. Jaime finds Cersei in the courtyard, in the map courtyard.
Did Jaime and Arya run across each other?
Who the hell knows? Because he's coming up from underneath.
Right. And she's running out to the city. Got it. Yeah. Okay. Thank you for clearing that up. Yeah.
So he finds her, convinces her to get out of there. She's actually glad to see him. And we don't really know how that is going to play out. But of course, you know, like, I'm not surprised by that. He manages to get her to go down and escape with him to get to some safety. So they're down in the, what do they call that, where the dragon bones were kept?
The catacombs.
But yeah, there was a different name for it, but whatever. So they're in the catacombs, and they're there, and she is in a panic because they can't get out. And she's like, I don't want to die, I'm, and he is just trying to get her to focus. It's okay. I am here with you. Just focus. He has to know that they're not getting out, that they're not surviving. Yep. She is just kind of a little bit, a lot crazy, obviously, and not necessarily ready for that.
But she's hysterical.
Yes,
and she's hysterical. Again, this all feeds, and not hysterical like funny, haha, like hysterical in the classical meaning. But this all feeds
out of character for her, but if she's mad, perhaps not.
Right. And that's just it. She has there's no sanity left. There's no mental awareness left. She's lost between losing the city and everything that's happened to her and everything else. There's nothing left there to hold on to reason. So this is literally her finding a safe point in her brother and not being able to function beyond that.
And they stand there together as we see death coming their way with everything around them collapsing. And we assume they die together down there.
But again, we don't see a body, so...
We don't, but let's just... I'm that's got to be it. If they end up resurrecting them somehow, that's going to seem just so ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's really going to piss me off more than how unsatisfying her death is.
I thought it was fine. I enjoyed it. I'm just glad to see Cersei die, to be honest with you. Like, just get out of here. I wish Arya had killed her, but I'll take breaks for 200, Alex.
Yeah, I suppose. I liked your theory last week better about Jaime, where maybe he was there to help get her off the throne, which is kind of what he was doing.
Yeah.
But he was there to be with her too.
Yeah, and that's the part that I didn't expect and that I was hoping wouldn't happen and that did happen, and that makes me sad.
Yep. Yep, me too. And then all we're left with really is the chaos on the ground and Arya making her way through all of that. And this is pretty lengthy. We get a series of scenes where we see her, she meets up with that woman and daughter that we have seen a number of times by now.
Mm-hmm.
And she actually, I believe, ends up meeting them because she's getting trampled. Like there's the scene where everybody is kind of running and she gets knocked down and trampled. And I'm at the point where I'm thinking, are you kidding me? Everything that this girl has been through,
and she's gonna die by
they're
crowd.
Gonna fucking kill her like this. I cannot take that. I cannot take it. But yeah. The way everything else is going, I wouldn't have been surprised. But that's not what happens. Mm-mm. This woman ends up helping her up and getting her out of the craziness and indoors. But Arya manages to convince them to get out of there because they're not safe there.
Yep.
They need to get out of the city. So she goes back outside, manages to get the woman and daughter to go with her. Oh, but that dragon is still lighting people up out there.
Now, they have several close calls. And
yep.
It almost seems for a moment like, oh my gosh, this is actually going to work. But then you remember that King's Landing is like literally miles wide. And there's just there's too much city, not enough time, and dragons come through, and it doesn't end well.
Burn people like Pompeii statues, I believe, is how Jenny put it. Yeah. And yeah, she manages to get out of the line of fire. The mother and daughter do not, and Arya kind of gets herself up and looks over and sees them.
I honestly expected Arya to get up after being nearly blasted by dragonfire, get up and have a half-melted face and almost Ooh. Literally have become the Hound. That's what Ooh. I was expecting.
It was way, way, way scratched up.
Yes. Oh yeah, she's all beat to crap. She's covered in ash and she's got blood everywhere. She's been knocked out like at least twice. Like she's not doing well.
No.
Luckily, she's got an incredible survivor instinct. But yeah, when she came up from the flames, I was expecting like half her face to be burnt, her to be like the female version of the Hound. And I was like, man, that'd just be poetic as shit. That's not what happened. She gets up, sees her Pompeii family in the middle of the street. And I think that's when, and right after that, she looks up at Dany flying overhead. And I think that's when Dany made the list.
Yeah, very possibly. I missed that. Like, I miss that that's what she's going to do next. And perhaps it is. That seems to be the consensus of everything that I'm reading. And I'm okay with that. I'm completely okay with that. So this is roughly the time, as things settle down now, because everything around her is dead, that she notices that the folks from the Delos control room have sent her a white horse.
Yes, if you look at the horse in this shot, it's covered in dust. You can see where it had
blood.
Yeah, it had a saddle blanket. It's got blood all over the front of it mostly. I think this was one of the Dothraki's Dothraki blood riders horses.
Okay,
that had lost its rider in some really harsh fashion so that all the tackle and everything else was taken off. Of course, they don't use a lot of tackle, so I guess that's not really that much of an issue. It's not like their horses have bits. Yeah, I think this is just a coincidence in the form of maybe showing my hand a little bit here, but it was a white horse with a brown spot, and it reminded me of Jaharis or whatever his name is.
Okay, that's interesting. I didn't catch that, but you always catch this stuff much better than I do.
where I just assume things that aren't there and have them get justified somehow later anyway. So
so she rides off into the ashen sunset.
Yeah, I was going to say the ash set, but that didn't sound right.
And so ends this episode.
Yes.
So we're left. Let's take a tally of who's left.
Okay.
We have Arya.
Mm-hmm.
We have Jon. We assume Tyrion. We didn't see Tyrion get out of the city, but I kind of assume Tyrion is alive, and he was in the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
The trailer,
by the way, that was only like 3 seconds long. Like it was not a long trailer. They did not give away very much at all.
Right, right.
Okay.
Davos survived?
Davos, I think, was somewhere waiting for Jaime and Cersei, because remember Tyrion had asked him if he was up for one last smuggling job. And I think that job wasn't to get the dinghy to the spot. I think the job was to get the dinghy to Essos. So I think Davos is somewhere else.
Okay.
Which again makes Davos the smartest person in Westeros.
He always is.
Because he's nowhere near everything else going on.
He always is. And then as far as anyone else down at the south, we assume Dany and Grey Worm.
Yes.
And that's it, isn't it?
Yeah, because everybody else is in the north somewhere. So, yeah, right. You got Dany, Grey Worm, Jon, Tyrion. Oh, I know we're missing people. But that's kind of it. So what next? You said you wanted to pontificate a little bit.
Yeah, so between... it's my belief that there's no way Daenerys is going to get the throne, even if she tries to make a claim for it. Jon would either perhaps pull rank. I don't know what forces he would have to fight her for it if he needed to. Or the theory that Arya would kill her. I think that's valid too. I think that is probably the cleanest way to wrap this up.
Hmm.
The question is, does Jon sit on the throne, or does Jon even survive? Because why wouldn't, like, right now, why wouldn't the remaining good guys survive? It would take some sort of fight with Daenerys and those who are still loyal to Daenerys for them to not survive, right?
Well, who is genuinely loyal to Daenerys over Jon, though? Grey Worm?
Yeah, and the armies report to Grey Worm.
Right, the armies that are left, because Dany wasn't checking flags when she was blasting away at King's Landing.
That's true. Everybody was equal opportunity toast.
Right. So Kent and I did a Deadpool a couple weeks ago to see who we thought would die, who would turn into a white, who would end up on the throne.
Yeah, I skipped over that when you gave me the Richard warning. Thank you for that, by the way.
We do our best. I actually have Tyrion sitting on the throne in the Deadpool. And I still don't think that's too far off from what might happen.
How does that happen? What's the line of succession that allows that to happen? Or sequence of events that allows that to happen?
Line of succession, not so much. If you want to talk about that, talk to Kent, because he's got...
Unless, in fact, he is a Targaryen, which we've hinted at.
Yes.
And there have been hints about for the last couple of seasons.
Yes. I think, I don't have Jon down for surviving, and I don't know that he,
what takes him out?
I thought he was going to die at the Battle of Winterfell. I thought he would die fighting the Night King, and I thought Bran would actually be the one to kill the Night King. The only time in the entire history of the show that I didn't think Arya was going to be the one killing the Night King was that one episode, and that's the one episode where Arya killed the Night King. So honestly, all of my theories have kind of been smashed, which is makes it a good show. But I don't see Daenerys sitting on the throne. I still think Tyrion is probably the most likely.
Also probably the best pick.
Right. And I think he does so with Sansa at his side. And that's completely just of my own thoughts.
That is wonderful. I like that because there are theories that Sansa takes the throne. Mm-hmm. I don't think she would be a good ruler. I don't think she's deserving of that necessarily. And again, it's that line of succession thing. Like, how does she get there other than the fact that she's kind of queen of the North right now for lack of anyone else being there?
Right. I don't think Dany and Jon survive. I think something happens with those two. Whether Arya kills Dany and then Jon kills... Well, Jon wouldn't kill Arya. Maybe Arya kills Dany, Grey Worm kills Arya, and then Jon kills Grey Worm and is mortally wounded himself. And that leaves Tyrion as the next in line because all the other successors of both houses are gone. Of course, you could always have Gendry, but I don't think Gendry would be a very good king either.
That doesn't make any sense.
No.
Yeah.
Which I think Gendry is who Kent picked. But yeah, I think Tyrion and Sansa are still a possibility. Jon being a possibility would be great. I would love to see Dany on the throne at the end of this. I don't think it's going to happen.
What?
Yep.
Why?
Because it's not the good story. It's because it's not the happy ending. Just plot sake, I think that would be amazing. I don't want it to happen, but I think that would be amazing.
Wow, that's interesting. Okay, all right.
Because remember, we're not supposed to have main characters die either, and we got one. Our first main character died in episode 2. And we found out that Lady wasn't a main character. Like, we, you know, had all this buildup about the wolves, and Lady died in episode 2. And then Ned died in episode 9. We thought the story was about him.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. No, I get that. I get that.
So Dany ended up on the throne would just be poetic justice for this show.
Interesting. I would be very dissatisfied with that solution. But we'll see what ends up happening. I don't feel like they're actually worried about what people are thinking and how it's going to be resolved. This writing, no, in all honesty, I don't think they are worried. Let me say this differently. There has been enough in both the production and the storyline and the way that they have been, I believe, kind of quickly wrapping things up, that they are more concerned about getting to an ending that they can justify and doing it in a way that they're proud of from an artistic perspective than what works for the audience.
They are on record as saying that when someone asked them where they're going to be to watch the final episode, the finale, they are on the record as saying they're going to be very far away from the internet and very drunk.
I think that's fair. All right. Two more questions for you.
Okay.
Do you really think that anybody that died this week is going to be alive in the final episode?
No.
Okay, neither do I.
I don't think we have time. I don't think we have... There's not enough... and especially going into the last episode, nobody has a plot... No one has plot armor enough to go into the last episode.
Yep. Okay. And final question. Do we see walkers again?
Yes.
Ooh. Interesting.
Because we have a contingent of people to include Ghost going up north that we haven't heard from in an entire episode, which is fine normally because it's just one episode, but we're getting down to crunch time. And we opened the series with Men of the Night's Watch, North of the Wall, seeing White Walkers, and not just a white, but an actual walker, that was doing crazy shit. And it would just like it would be fitting for Dany to be on the throne at the end of this, it would be fitting for Tormund and Tormund and company to go north through the wall and to see a White Walker or a white or some semblance that the Night King is not dead.
Because we have to revisit the North again in the final episode if the characters there don't come down south, right?
Right. Right. There's too many beans in the chili for that not to happen.
I've never heard that one before. I might have to use that someday. All right. Well, this has been a lot of fun because I actually wanted to do some speculation this time, and yeah. I don't let myself normally do that. And there was a lot to talk about in this episode, even though I'm not ultimately happy about it.
I have a question for you, though.
Oh, okay.
I want to know, because if you were to watch the second to last, all the way through to the second to last episode of Lost, everybody was hyped up. Oh my gosh, it's going to come to an end. Holy crap.
I was thinking about Lost.
And then the last episode left so many people disappointed because they didn't understand it, myself included, until much later, if at all. It took Tom Merritt for me to realize that I was wrong about it. And he called me out on Court Killers, and I had to go do my research and rewatch it. And I was like, now it totally makes sense. Could I explain it? No, but it makes sense. And that's exactly what he said. And how do you feel about this series going into the last episode? What is your pre-finale impression of the series as a whole?
So as a whole, I think it has been entertaining. I'm glad we did this. I don't really think that this lives up to the hype that it gets. I think that it is one of the few shows right now that is of an epic quality, if you will, or an epic nature. And that's probably contributing to why it gets the attention that it has. I don't know that there's really anything like it or that we've had anything like it before, short of, say, the Tolkien films or something along those lines that had long, long story arcs with complicated histories. I mean, that's what Tolkien was really known for, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, if I were to compare this to those movies, I far preferred those movies because I felt like they hit the note every single time. And there are too many times with this show where either the approach that they've taken is so precise and so specific that I don't notice it. And I feel like I can't be alone in that. Or that it just goes in a direction that doesn't make any sense or feels satisfying. And this episode was a good example of that. So going into the finale next week, I get why your wife doesn't want to watch it. I'm very frustrated right now. And I don't see how they wrap this all up in one episode, but that's why I'll watch it.
Mm-hmm.
Right, I want to see how they pull it off. I want to see how they end these characters' stories. And I just hope that it doesn't disappoint. So I'm going in hoping I don't get disappointed. It's worth saying, I love the ending for Lost. Still tear up when I see that last scene.
Yeah. For me, I think this has been a very epic adventure. I think that as the show has strayed from the written material, it has gotten harder to maintain that that initial wonderment that the show or the early seasons had, with the exception of three, because three was just super slow. But I still think that when they started the show, George R.R. Martin said, "You have 10 years to tell the story. I'm not going to release another book until you released all, until the story is closed out. And I expect Winds of Winter, the next book in the series, to come out this Christmas." And I am exceptionally happy that I watched it. I'm even happier that I rewatched it with you and Jenny. And I think it's just, it's probably one of my favorite shows, even though I understand it has its flaws. Of course, Firefly and Friends are the other two on that list. So, and House, man, there's a lot of good TV. And yeah, would I recommend the series to someone? Of course. Of course I would.
All right.
I did several times. That's why you got on the show.
Yeah, that's why I'm here. That's why I'm here. And I don't regret it. I don't regret it at all. I just, it isn't on my top five or maybe even 10 list.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So, okay. One closes out. We got one episode left next week, and hopefully we will have a guest for it as well, because we were supposed to try to have one tonight and it, or this morning, it didn't work out because this morning, one of our regular hosts couldn't even stay on very long because of life. So, why don't you close out, Richard, and we will tell people that there's a lot of feedback they can give at letstalkaboutthrones@gmail.com.
Oh, nice plug there. And we're going to go through all of that in the post-conclusion episode.
Yes.
We will have one more episode after our next where we go through the feedback, and we love your feedback. So thank you, Anthony. If people don't necessarily want to tell us what they think about Thrones or our discussion thereof, but they, instead they want to tell you what they think about you, how could they do that?
In their heads.
They can, don't tell me.
Yeah, they can share their opinions of me in their own minds. If they would like to throw a witty joke at me, though, you can find me on Twitter at Ethan Caine, E-T-H-A-N-C-A-I-N-E.
All right, and if anyone wants to tell me how Game of Thrones clueless I am, they can do that by sending me a message at Richard Gunther on Twitter. And definitely don't DM me. Just send it in public. Shame me publicly.
You know, it's far more fun that way.
I own my ignorance. I'm all about it. And this has been Let's Talk About Thrones. We almost forgot Jenny. She's not here, but we can tell people that they can reach Jenny, too.
At JennieJ23 on Twitter.
JennyJ23, she's awesome. We're sorry she's not here for the conclusion of this episode, but thank you for joining us for this episode of Let's Talk About Thrones.
Bye.
RITUALMISCOY